Hello and welcome aboard the Game Train podcast. I'm Callan.
And I'm Carl.
And on this week's Game Train, we talk the PS4 exclusive Nier Automata, we give our thoughts and feelings on Yooka-Laylee, we discuss Kickstarters for games, are they worth it or are they just sucking people in? We look at 1990 to 1994 of Games of Our Lives, answer your questions, and give our lame trains and hype trains for this cast. But first up, the news.
Uncharted Lost Legacy DLC, I don't know if you could call it that. It's almost its own little game now, but the release date is out, which is August 22. The Watch Dogs 2 DLC, which was supposed to be paid DLC, just came out today for free. Yesterday, by the time you're listening to this.
Well, that's pretty cool, giving free stuff. You don't hear of game companies doing that an awful lot.
No, outside of CD Projekt Red, it was very rare for this kind of thing. This is like nearly a game changer for the whole multiplayer section, and it was almost awesome. I played a lot of the Watch Dogs 2 multiplayer with a friend of mine, and I had a lot of fun with it, but it was still pretty broken. So I'm very keen to jump on and try this one, and I'll have more to say about it next time.
Release date for AFL Evolution, which is the AFL video game, has been announced. It comes out the 5th of May. And also, they've added the AFL Women's to it as well. So not only is the men's competition in it, the women's competition's in it too. So they kept that pretty tight-lipped and announced that in their trailer, which came out the other day.
Nice.
Also, the release date for Battlefront 2 dropped as well as the new trailer for that. That comes out on November 17.
Yes.
On PC, Xbox and PS4.
I'm so keen for that.
Blizzard's announced a time-walking raid in World of Warcraft 7.2.5 patch. The Black Temple's coming back, which was an old raid which came out many years ago. They're allowing you to go back as max-level characters, sort of like downgraded to that level that it should have been played at again. And, Carl, you'd be excited about the Scorpio announcement.
Yes.
That came out in the last 2 weeks as well, with the specs on that.
Yes, I am.
How do you feel about that?
I'm so excited. I mean, I wish I knew more. I guess they're saving all that up for E3. You know, I want to know what it's called. I want to know what it looks like. I want to know how much it's going to be. So
Scorpio's code name for the new Xbox that's coming.
Yes, of course.
Which is like the Xbox 1.5, you could say.
I guess so. It's the Xbox One Pro, if that makes more sense, but
yeah,
I don't know what they're going to call it. Maybe they'll finally use 720 like everyone's been waiting for.
Xbox 2.
God, that would just be so confusing.
Yeah. But the thing I'm worried about is that with this, like, it's like almost like a half a generation step, because it's not really the next Xbox. It's just built upon what the current Xbox plays, so you can play all those games still, but with higher resolutions, better frame rates, etc., right?
Yeah.
Like, it's got more grunt under the hood, under the console. Now, what I'm worried about is that it will bring out exclusives to the Scorpio only, because it's actually quite a big power jump from the Xbox.
It is a bigger jump than I expected, yeah.
What I'm worried that they're going to start splintering their player base, in that they go, oh, hey guys, here's the Scorpio only version of this, but you can't play it online with the Xbox One version of the same game.
Yeah, well, they have...
Or it has its own exclusives as well, like, you know, like the new Halo is only for, you know, Scorpio.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have specifically stated that that won't be the case and that everything will be playable on everything as it is, besides how it runs and how it looks. It has a Blu-ray player, so I'm pretty... Like, and I mean that as in the 4K Blu-ray, which is just too weird that that's not in the PS4 Pro or even in the
that
new
is
Slim.
Weird.
They don't Sony own Blu-ray? I'm not, you know.
Yeah, that's a strange one.
I'm
what
so
do you
confused.
Think the price is going to be on this machine then?
Wow, that's hard. So what is an Xbox One these days? Like 360 or something like that? Or 380?
Yeah, I think the Pro was going for 530 when it released in November.
Oh, man, it's going to be a fun... It's so powerful. It's such a big machine. I don't know how it's going to be cheaper than $600. Callan, what's that game we've been playing?
Nier Automata.
Nier Automata. I'm going to roll with that. Yep, that sounds good. It's developed by Platinum Games, published by Square Enix. PS4 exclusive is a sequel to the first Nier. And I've just only recently discovered, I don't know if other people knew this, and if it was common knowledge, then it's news to me, but it's also connected to the early Drakengard games from PS2, which has a really interesting lore and how it all connects. I saw it on a YouTube video, actually, a lore summary, which I'll put the link onto our Facebook right after this. And it was really interesting how they all tied together. But that aside, the game, I've loved it. I'm onto my third playthrough, strictly speaking. It's a lot of fun. It's like, I did speak a little bit about it last week. I hadn't played that much, but now I've finished it twice and a half, and I just love it. I'm still loving it. The replayability is very different and interesting, and doing it in a way that I've never seen before. I don't know if it's been done a lot, but nothing I've experienced, and I'm really enjoying it. There's a lot of incentive when you play it again. There's more gameplay things that get, you know, revealed, more story. So it's kind of like I didn't finish it yet. The game controls beautifully. The story, I'm totally sucked in. It's weird, it's strange, it's everything Japanese RPGs are, you know, like the story is just, it sucks you in. It doesn't make much sense, but when it does, it's awesome. And you know, there are a few.
Yeah, you're pretty much playing in this as android named 2B and her companion android 9S.
Yep.
And you guys are, well, androids, which were made by humans. The game's set in 5000 AD something.
Yeah.
Humans have been living on the moon after they fled Earth from aliens, and they're sending androids back down to Earth to fight machines that the aliens have made.
Correct. So they're not even seeing or fighting the said aliens. They've got their own robots, which they call machines, or we call machines, and humans have their robots that they call androids, which are made in their image. And and the machines are really like old school looking robots, just really simple sort of.
It's pretty cool. Like, what I've enjoyed is, as you sort of touch on, I'd say the controls are silky. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
That's how smooth they are. It's just silk. Like, 2B, she just moves great, you know.
Which is such a Platinum thing when they do it right.
Yes. Yeah. It's a really slick sort of control scheme to have. Combat smooth. It's quick. It's fun. It engages you. You think, you know, you need to think it sometimes, you know, set things up in how you sort of, what abilities you're going to bring in and things like that into combat. But it's quite fun.
I do. And I love the menu system with that, the chip system. Like, it works like you're a robot and you have sort of chips you can input, which give you abilities like run a bit faster or a little bit stronger, or you can dodge longer. Even things like part of the heads up display, like mini map, or, you know, show how much damage I'm taking. You can take those out if you want to, but they're part of the gameplay. So you can remove those, and it means you can add in something like run faster. But if you want to see the map, you have to sacrifice something. It's just done really, it's quite refreshing using that in gameplay. And like,
it's quite interesting how they've set it up. Like, and then, you know, if you want to show your experience bar, you got to pay extra for that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and things like, which I haven't actually shelled out for. I'm like, I don't really need to see it. So
yeah, exactly.
I'll just sort of not worry about it and put a different ability in. I found the side quests are pretty average. Like, it's like, hey, take this to this person, and then you take it to that person. They're like, oh, now take this back to that person again. You're like, oh,
yeah. There's a lot of
fetch quests. That's fun. Or there's a lot of backtracking as well. Like, you're constantly running back over a terrain you've already run through.
I do like the characters mentioning both those things, and quite a lot of it, which is, it's almost like they know, and it's almost like, is it filler or is it like necessary? And like 9S, your companion, you know, when you do some of the fetch quests, she's like, or he, sorry, says to you and says things like, I don't get it. We're these almighty androids. Why are we delivering these things to these people? This seems a bit rudimental, or, and you know,
yep.
your play says, like, stop complaining. It's all part of the mission. This all helps in the end. So, yep. And he's like, oh, this is so boring. Or sometimes, like you said, when you backtrack and he's like, oh, this way again. And it's like,
yep.
What are you doing here? Are you trying to point out?
Yeah, boring, you know, like, it's a bit bizarre at the same time. Like, I think I've become almost used to games that have clever level design that you know, you're like, oh, I've got to head all the way back, but then it all somehow connects up and you come through back a different way. While this, I'm just going back and forth on the same paths I've already traversed, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
That's true. It does clear up very soon, like quite quickly. It takes about 3 or 4 hours, and then it opens up a lot of fast travel points that help you do that. But that doesn't come for a while, and you do have to spend a lot of time backtracking.
Yeah. Also, talking about the level design, the world's quite bare.
Like a generation late style bare.
Yeah, the game feels at times very PS3-ish, apart from the smoothness and the combat and things, which feels very, you know, this gen. Just things like that I was a bit disappointed with so far.
Yeah, the world doesn't feel very alive.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it. Like, the music's great. It's got the whole game's got that very Japanese RPG feel to it from word go. It feels that way straight away.
I do love the music. It really sets this really eerie, strange mood and picks up, and just very interesting sort of different languages in different areas that these songs are sung in. I can't put my finger on it. Sometimes it sounds French, sometimes it sounds Japanese. So they've got musicians and artists and all kinds of things from all over just to get this weird sort of eerie sense of, I don't even know how you describe it. Some of it's like slow, mellow, you know, music, and some is just the rock almost, and opera, or little kids singing. And yeah, it's very interesting. It's like its own little extra character to me.
Moving on from Nier now, we're going on to our feature game this week, Yooka-Laylee.
Bam!
Yooka-Laylee was announced 2 years ago by Playtonic Games. These guys separated from an old studio called Rare, who developed such games as Donkey Kong Country.
Brilliant.
And also Banjo-Kazooie. So these guys set out to make pretty much a spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie, and they went about getting their game together by going through a Kickstarter campaign. They found a publisher as well, Team 17. When this was announced, this original Kickstarter, they raised over £2 million through this. Through 70,000 backers. Well, awesome. Over 70,000 backers.
Yeah, that's massive.
Pledged money. And at the time, this record's now been beaten, but at the time, it was the fastest game to reach the $1 million mark on Kickstarter. You play, just like in Banjo-Kazooie, you play as two characters, a bigger character down the bottom and a small character at the top. Yooka is down the bottom. He is he's a chameleon, a lizard. And on his shoulders is Laylee, the fruit bat. This is a 3D platforming game, which were very, very popular back in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
And pretty much Playtonic wanted to capture the nostalgia we felt from those games back there and make this, take that old concept and bring it into the new age sort of thing.
Yeah.
And How do you feel about that, Carl?
I feel like another part of their goal, personally, what I felt and what I was sort of hyped for was, and I should mention, and also what the remake of Ratchet and Clank recently, the PS4 exclusive, did for me, was kind of make this and almost demonstrate this to the same generation that we were when we were playing it. You know, we were us now. There's a lot of gamers buying games out there who are in their 30s who've been playing games ever since people used to think games were just for kids. But when we were kids, when we were like, you know, 13, 14, 15-year-olds, we were playing these games and we just adored them. And I feel like these guys are bringing back that nostalgia of the feelings we had, but also showing the generation that are that age, hey, you guys really missed out on something amazing, and bring it and kind of make it relevant now again to that generation as well as us.
Well, yeah, they've gone so far with this game to make it like Banjo-Kazooie, right? from the two characters to the musical instrument name, to even down to you look at the menu screen for the game. Like, because I started playing Banjo-Kazooie the other day to try and compare the two, right? Which is great. It's the same menu style.
And the font. Text. And the way they talk.
The same font. It references Banjo-Kazooie with honeycomb references throughout the game, which was a collectible back in your energy bar in Banjo-Kazooie. Instead of getting jigsaws, you're getting pages from books. Instead of getting musical notes, you're getting quills. It's pretty much, if they, if you took this game back to 1998 and just put the words Banjo-Kazooie on it, or Banjo-Kazooie 3, it's pretty much that. Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's got the same charm, the same quirkiness.
Even down to the controls are so similar in the way that they play. It's just, they've gone and looked at what they made back in 1998, and they've gone and pretty much replicated that with new characters now. Mind you, they've made now bigger worlds. Like, they've got the technology to do that now.
Much bigger.
Like, in Banjo-Kazooie, it was only 10 jigsaws a level, while in Yooka-Laylee, it's 25 pages a level. Instead of 100 notes, you're getting 200 quills. But in Yooka-Laylee, there's only 5 worlds, while in Banjo-Kazooie, there are 9 worlds.
Yeah, which I feel like I would have rather 9 smaller worlds.
And I agree with you on that. Like, yeah, and it was a bit overbearing at first when I went, oh, geez, there's 25 pages in this level and there's 200 quills I've got to try and now collect.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've done the whole sort of rhyming. They use a lot of rhyming like they did in Banjo-Kazooie as well with, like, the text from characters. None of the characters actually speak. They've just got this weird jumbly voices, which they had, like, in Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, almost like that The Sims language as well. Yep. Kind of weird, yeah.
They reference back to Nintendo 64, like there's a Cloud and he's got a hat on and it's got a 64 on the hat. You know, there's all these cute little references back to the past sort of thing.
Yeah, that was cool. I did like that.
Also, the guys at Playtonic have kept their same humor they've had in the games back then. Like, were they sneaking a couple of adult jokes into, like, a game that looks like a children's game sort of thing? Like, this is rated G, but there is a snake and his name is Trouser.
Yeah, and there's that, I did like the boat they were painting, which was called Bat Ship Crazy.
Yes, that's right.
Stuff like that. And
there's flirty flowers, there's a creepy minecart, which says some interesting things. Like, they sneak in, like, some adult jokes into what could really be a child's game. Like, a child is still fine to play this game, but, and these jokes would probably go over their head, but if adults in there, straight away I went Trouser Snake. I went, okay, guys.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, and the mine,
but a lot of interesting. You know, things. Like, Yooka and Laylee are very similar to Banjo and Kazooie, even their personalities. Yooka's the very straight shooter, kind of like Banjo was. I kind of think I preferred Banjo's character to Yooka's character. I just find Yooka quite boring. Laylee, on the other hand, the fruit bat, I love Laylee. She's awesome. Like, she's probably the highlight of the game for me. She's awesome. She's got some great one-liners like Kazooie had back in Banjo-Kazooie. Yeah. But she's just really cool. She's, like, a smart ass. And I think the character design is great. You know, this purple bat with this big red nose sort of thing. And I think she's really cool.
Yeah. The one thing about the character design, which I was never really sold on, because it always felt like, and still kind of feels like, concept art and just a bit simple. And I know it's supposed to be simple, but I just, while I'm walking around, I don't like seeing just this bat sitting on Yooka's head. I really loved in Banjo-Kazooie how Kazooie was in the bag. And I don't know, I guess I like the clothes. Banjo had his shorts and then the bag would flip open and there's a bird in it. And sometimes you see the wings and sometimes you see his legs and... I love that, how it was all intertwined and looked naturally like one character in a game that's spurted into two characters, and you're like, oh, you know, I'm really playing two. But in this, you literally see a bat stuck on a lizard, like, just on it. I don't know. It just doesn't feel as clever. You know, it feels like, okay, we need a big thing and a small thing. Let's pop that on there, and we're done. I don't know. Something about the backpack.
You couldn't really put a bat in a backpack, though.
I mean, sure you could. If you could put a big old bird in there with wings and feet and a beak and all that stuff.
Yeah, you know? that's true.
I mean, and that's just me. And there's something quite plain just about the naked Yuka running around. It just seems...
You feel like he should have yellow shorts on, don't you?
I don't know. I love the clothes.
You know, there's a way to get yellow shorts on him. I think in the game there's like... I've seen it in the menu, or yellow shorts tonic that you can add in.
Is there?
But, yes.
I have to check that out.
Yeah, it says yellow shorts, and I'm like, oh, surely. I think it's if you get everything in the game. So you have to 100% this game to get it.
Yeah, no. I'm going to go check that out on YouTube, see what it looks like.
All right, Carl, come on, unleash, go on.
Oh, I don't know what he's talking about. Yuka.
How long did you play this game for, Carl?
You know, I gave it a good 5 hours, maybe.
5 hours, yep. And maybe. Then what did you do?
Yeah, and then I tried to fight Slopey. Is that his name?
It's the wall. It's the boss in the first level. The wall. Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, I was not enjoying the camera at all from the get go. I was really struggling with it because I just sort of jumped straight off Nia, which had just the most incredible camera options I've ever experienced. And I was spending so much time with it and trying different things, and it was changing how I played. They had separate camera options for combat and separate for just traversal and distance and speed and up and down. Anyway, then I played this and I'm like, oh, well, they brought all the nostalgia back, like all of it. It's almost like they went in and played Banjo-Kazooie and went, oh, yeah, that's a bit annoying. Let's not forget to put that in case everyone forgot about camera movement. And it was... I mean,
what exactly don't you like about the camera? Like, how is this ticking you off?
It just, okay, firstly, like, as I started, it just wasn't following right. And when I try to correct it, it just kind of, it was very heavy and lagged. And it's just hard to explain till you're actually there. And it would be just sort of at the wrong angle, filming like, almost like it's pointed at the ground. And I tried to look so I could see more ahead of myself, but the camera was kind of slow to react to my moving it. And then I thought, hey, I could get used to this slowly, you know, and I'll just figure it out and just play with this slow, unresponsive camera. I've done it a million times before when I was younger, and I still fell in love with games, sure. Anyway, then I went to fight that boss, and I wished they were there, but they've disappeared. I recorded 4 videos on my Xbox of me attempting to just step on this ramp, and every time I got a bit closer... The camera switched to face a different direction, but when it did that, it also changed the direction that I was pointing my character in. So when I walked back, it switched again, kind of like what Resident Evil used to do in the very first and second games, where the camera would just switch, and if you walk into a house, you had to switch the direction you were pointing your character in, which was fine in a slow-paced, think-about-everything-you-do situation, but there's these logs flying at me, and I'm trying to dodge them, and I'm falling off this ramp and trying to jump back on, and the camera's just going literally like facing the complete opposite direction to where I'm standing, so I couldn't even kind of pinpoint where I was and where I'm at, and it was just insane. And after all the slow sort of slog it took me to get there, and it just wasn't enough for me to stay in after that, because I just thought, if this is all that's I'm going to get put through, I can see the charm, and I can see what's happening. I see the gameplay loop. I see the collecting, and I do love and remember that. The characters were funny. It just didn't quite grab me. I didn't fall in love like I thought I wanted to. And maybe because I'm getting older, or I don't know what it is, but that the sound of the talking was really irritating to me. I don't know why, because it was...
I didn't mind the sound of the talking. I kind of like it.
It was funny and fine and nostalgic, like Banjo-Kazooie style.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it anymore. Maybe I'm just over it, and it was just... When I turned it up nice and loud to hear the music and the sound effects, the talking was just like, wow, that's hard to handle. So I thought, I'll just turn it off. you know, all games have voice and sound effects and music separated. You know, I'll just turn that off and I'll just continue on, and it'll just be like an RPG where the words come up in a million other Final Fantasies. I thought, I'll do that. But I couldn't. There was another option that wasn't there. There was just sound effects and music. And I was like, oh, damn. But that's totally just my own thing. I'm not even sure why, because I always thought it was fine back then. But I think maybe because back then I didn't have other options. There wasn't great voice acting, if any, in most games anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I thought this was their best attempt. But
you got to remember where this game came from. It was raised from a Kickstarter. It had a small budget to make a game as big as it kind of is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right.
It had a small team. And their goal was to recapture what Banjo-Kazooie was. And that's exactly what they went and did.
Yeah.
I'm not going to disagree with you on everything. I know there are things wrong with this game. I just think it's getting a harsher whack than what it should be getting. It's not a full price game.
No, it's not. But, and this is the hitter, because you haven't experienced this, but I did play another not full price game, which was the Ratchet and Clank remake. And that was just brilliant.
What was the budget on that game, though?
I have no idea, but I would have rathered a much smaller game that was... And the graphics just weren't what I thought they would be either. They just didn't look next-gen. Like, Ratchet and Clank was so interesting because it was such an old 90s game, and then playing it again, and I remember thinking, like, wow, this game, they were so interesting and fun back in the day, but then when you play it now, they must be able to make these characters look amazing. And then they did. I'm like, wow, of course. And there was fur and you know, everything moving individually. The water was beautiful. The landscape was amazing. And that's true. They did have a much bigger budget. But again, it was same price. It was right down to like $50. And it was like huge game collecting. And they brought back all my nostalgia from playing Ratchet and Clank. But they made it relevant to now and current, and like everything kind of worked and flowed real nicely. And I think I was spoiled by that, like, which is really unfair, because I feel like I'm judging Yooka-Laylee a bit more harshly because of my experience with Ratchet and Clank, but it's hard not to. I feel like I've got these higher expectations unfairly on this small Kickstarter budget. But then again, these ex-Rare guys, they're just brilliant. Like, I don't know, yeah. But they definitely did capture that old school thing, so I'll give them that.
Would you play Yooka-Laylee 2 if it came out?
I would.
Because you'd give it another go.
Absolutely, because I'm such a sucker for this genre. I was so, and Ratchet and Clank.
So you don't hate fun fully, then? You just hate fun a little, is what you're saying.
Hate fun, me. Me and most reviewers on Earth both hate fun just a little.
Well, I've gotten a lot of fun from the game. I'm still going through it. I've probably 80 to 90% of 3 worlds out of the 5 now. I'm enjoying it.
Awesome.
The music's very vibrant, like Banjo-Kazooie. I'm enjoying the music and stuff like that as well. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I did like the music.
The game's hard, though. It's not an easy game. Like, if you bought this game for a child, they'd get destroyed in the first world.
That's true. Is there, like, a difficulty rating?
Nope. Oh, wow, like changing from normal to easy.
Yeah.
Nope.
Oh, that's unfortunate, because it does look like it would be a great game for kids.
Yeah, exactly. Damn. It's hard. Like, I've struggled through some bits. Like, even just one of the first little quests you do, you race a cloud around this course, right?
Yes,
and so you race him, and that's fine, but you got to keep your rolling power going by collecting these little butterflies.
Yep, I
did
this.
Which is normally fine. The problem is, A, the butterflies are small. B, they've got a small collection box on the butterflies, so they're easy to miss. C, the butterflies move, so you're lining it up, and they'll just slightly move, and you'll go zooming past it.
Like by a pixel.
And D, if you miss one, you generally run out of energy to keep rolling because you don't have an upgraded roll capacity, energy capacity, but at that stage in the game, and you lose the race. It is brutal.
Yep. Yeah. And
But then you wouldn't have seen this. Later in that level, after you've beaten that race, you can freeze half the level, come back and race him on ice.
Oh, no, really?
Yes, really. So you got to race the same course, but then on ice. With the same butterflies, with the same collection boxes.
Well, I have a great respect for you. Well done.
Thank you.
Well done. I mean,
I think you might actually race him with water as well. I think maybe, but I'm not 100% sure on that because I haven't fully completed that world yet, but I'm about 90% through it. And I think that might be one of the other pages I'm missing. I just don't know how to do it. But I'm not 100% sure. But if I got to race that fucking cloud again, I'm not going to be impressed.
So one thing these two games were playing this week, Nier Automata. I'm going to learn how to say that. Also, it's a terrible name. The new Nier and Yuka, I guess, is they both have really shitty racing sequences in them.
Oh, yeah. Yep, agreed. Like, Nier's racing sequences aren't fun either. Like, that's just... And, like, you only just beat the cloud in Ukulele. Like, as I said, you can't mess up once. And that's the same with the races in Nier.
Yes.
Like, there is no margin for error. And that's where frustration comes into it. Because
yeah, there's that fine line between fun completion
yep.
and frustration.
Like, when you miss one of these butterflies by, like, the smallest margin, it's like, oh, great, I've got to start that whole race again. I've lost because the butterfly... Also, sometimes, actually, with the butterflies, another point is that, you know, you'll go through the race or part of the race because you fail it, and then you restart the race, and then the butterflies are in a different position.
Yes, yeah, because you
plan
it.
And it's like, what? But there was there before? Now I've got to learn where they are now?
And yeah,
Then you do it again, and then they've reverted back to their original spot again?
Yeah, that was...
Yeah, that was stupid. And there's like, other examples of just how this game is harder than it needs to be, I feel. Like, it's already quite challenging. Even if they made the collection boxes on these butterflies bigger, it would
yeah,
still
like
be
if
a
you
challenging
can get it
race.
By the wing or something.
Yeah,
it would
still be a
the
challenging
head.
Race, but it wouldn't be as frustrating, I don't think.
Yeah, maybe and, even more
like,
fun.
There was a bit... I uploaded a video of this onto the Facebook page of when I'm going through this cave. So this is in the ice world. So it is a dark cave with ice. Why combine the two? I have no idea. So you've got a timed light at times throughout the thing. And then you've got to roll up onto this slope and jump from a slope to a slope to a slope. Now, that's hard as it is. But what makes it even harder is that when you make the jump to the slope, the first slope, sometimes you overshoot. And then you'll go sliding off the other platform. Instead of being a nice wall to block your sort of run so you can, like, readjust and move on to the next one, which is still hard to do, you just go flying off because there's a gap there. And then you go all the way back to the start of the cave. And then you got to go through it all again up to that point. Like, I struggled on that cave, like, on that video that I uploaded for an hour.
Yeah.
An hour. Over and over. Because I was that determined to get through it. And then, yeah, it just wasn't fun, and it could still be a difficult challenge if, you know, they don't have that set other gap behind the slope ice wall. It would have still been really hard for me to get there and get through it, but it wouldn't have been at just the frustrating levels it got to.
Yeah, so...
Just little things like that, that they could have just... You're talking about the camera. I get that in some bits. Like, things like that just needed to be tightened up a little. And I think it could have gone from, you know... A lot of people are bagging out, calling it below average game. I think it's a good game still, but I feel if they had have just tightened a few, let's say, nuts and bolts, you know.
Nice.
Yeah. around, that's a reference to Banjo-Kazooie 3, everyone.
Thank you.
Just tighten those little things up. They could have made, like, a good, solid platforming game. That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with you. But... I'm putting the camera in that same little bit of nuts
well,
and bolts.
As I said, the camera could use a little tightening up. There's been a couple of times when I've gone off at the camera, but not to your levels of just, yeah.
Mine just, yeah, it just set me off, but...
Yeah, we're now scoring our feature games. We thought we'd actually lock down a score rather than just sort of leaving it there. So we are going out of a 10 scale. With 0.5s if you'd like in between.
Yep.
So yeah, I've gone 7 out of 10 carriages.
Wow. See, this is really interesting. Because I myself have also given it a 7 out of 10 carriages.
So, as we mentioned in the ukulele feature, Kickstarter, where we want to have a little discussion about this, about what's going on in the industry of Kickstarter. So, a little run through about Kickstarter quickly. People pledge money to get games made, right? The developers set an initial goal that they go with. So, it might be, let's say, I don't know, $1 million or something like that. Maybe, normally it's less, but yeah, and then there's a stretch goal of added features that if they hit certain targets, they'll add those features into the game as well.
Consoles or more content.
More content or a speedier release date or multiplayer features, etc., etc. Also, the more money a person pledges into a Kickstarter, the more they get out of it. Like, companies will put up like signed cases or T-shirts, or in the case of ukulele, you can get your voice. You could have gotten your voice in the game. People that did ukulele also got the game a couple of days earlier. They ordered the physical copy, just things like that, just depending on how much money you put into it. So then, you know, these developers will then take this money, and it's pretty much as it is. It's a kickstart to the development. They'll go off and develop the game, then release the game, and then, yeah, you know, from people like Carl and myself, they'll make extra money on top of what they originally made from the Kickstarter.
Yep.
So, you know, we're seeing this more and more now. It's all through all industries, from in music, it's in inventions and games.
Movies.
We're going to pretty much focus on the games today, because this is a game podcast.
Of course, that makes sense.
Do you
sense.
Think it's good or bad for the industry?
I think it's excellent, to be honest. Excellent for the indie side of the industry. All those, there are just so many, many, many thousands of incredible ideas that just can be done so simply. Like, you know, when they did those Summer of Arcade on Xbox 360, and we were starting to see those, just that plethora of magical games like Braid and games like Limbo, just these gems that don't look like they take much, but people just, they have these ideas, they can program a game, put a team together, but they just don't have the budget because they're not a giant.
Exactly, and it comes at the end of the day, it comes down to money. Like, you know, and they end up making money from these games, but it's just getting the initial, it's almost like a home deposit, pretty much. You know,
they just need that little bit
at the start to get their idea going and get their game development up.
Yeah, so I do think for that, like for indies and for those sort of those big ideas that just need to exist so we can experience them.
Yeah, and it's cool. I think it's a great idea. Games like Ukulele come out as well, you know, which is like a team of old developers that have gotten together, and then they've pitched their idea, you know, to people, and you know, try and get money that way as well.
Yeah, it's a lot of like opportunity for things like Ukulele, which are like dream come true type games that you just didn't think were ever going to come back or were never going to happen again. Like
that's right,
another Banjo-Kazooie game, and this is exactly what that is. And you know, well, shit, Banjo-Kazooie fans would be just so stoked.
Yes, exactly. And then there's other things like the Shenmue series, right? We'll talk a little bit about this one. So Shenmue was a game that came out in Japan. There's been 2 in the series so far, Shenmue 1 and 2. Very popular in Japan. For over a decade, fans have been asking for Shenmue 3. Where's Shenmue 3? Etc, etc. Anyway, at the 2015 E3... at the Sony presentation, so this wasn't its own little presentation or anything on the internet, this was at Sony's massive press event where they pretty much show everything that they're releasing over the next 12 months and all that, or what's in development. Huge, huge deal around these presentations. They wheel out, Sony wheels out on their presentation the developer of Shenmue to announce that they are doing a Kickstarter for Shenmue 3.
Nice.
Yes. Now,
nice.
I look at that and I go, you know what? I think they've done it wrong.
Yeah, it feels a bit distasteful.
Sony is publishing this game, right? So this game is being developed by WiseNet. I think that's how you pronounce it. So Sony's not putting any money into the development, they say, but they're paying for all the marketing and the distribution of the game at the end of the day.
Which is a huge chunk.
Which is a huge chunk of money. While in Ukulele Sensor, all the Kickstarter money, that £2 million that was raised, went into the development and marketing, etc. Shenmue 3, on that day, raised $2 million in under 8 hours. It was the fastest Kickstarter campaign ever to reach that amount of money. Then, at the end of July, so a month later, it had raised over $6 million. It was the highest funded video game Kickstarter of all time at that time, and it still might be. And it's the sixth highest funded campaign in Kickstarter history out of everything.
Wow.
Which is huge, but I think it was wrong that Sony just wheeled him out like that. You know what? Either A, announced it, you know, through other means and send out press releases and all that, they'd probably have still easily made their targets, right?
Well, easily. Not as easily.
Well, but I still reckon they would have hit it.
Yeah.
I just feel that a company as big as Sony, if you're going to publish a game like this, just bankroll it from the start.
Yeah.
You know, just put your develop... Just go to the studio, right, here's the money for the development, and because, yeah, I think it's great that it gets these smaller indie games off the ground. I just think it's a bit stepping over the line when a company as big as Sony, which we know how big that company is, comes out and goes, "Hey, look, kickstart this, guys," when really Sony could have easily just thrown them they raised $6 million from the Kickstarter. Sony could have easily given them $6 million, easily.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you and I, we don't know how these kind of things work in the background, but we see how big a company like Sony is. That's, we're not talking about these other random local businesses. This is like a worldwide giant thing. Yep. That makes consoles and TVs and electronics and software, and like, it's a massive company. And I don't know, it's like, you know how much people want this. Maybe they didn't. But maybe as soon as they did know in that first 3 hours, maybe then just come and... I don't know what that was. Like, was it a social experiment or just... Yeah, it was a bit strange, kind of...
I hope we don't see that again at this year's E3 from Microsoft or Nintendo or Sony or anyone like that.
That it becomes a trend. See, it's a tricky one because we say that. Or, you know, you say you hope you don't see it, but maybe... The guys doing the Kickstarter, maybe this is a dream come true.
What's that EA? Kickstarter for Skate 4? Take my money.
Yeah, I mean, I'd give it to them, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a fine line. It's like, you know, maybe the team that made them and no one's sort of buying their idea and they go like, right, well, let's try and prove you wrong. And I'm trying to tell you that there is fans out there that want my game. And they go, fine, well, we're not going to pay for it, but... Because you're so sure, we'll let you announce it at E3 on our... And maybe that's a dream come true for them. So it does suck, though, because you just think, like, come on. Just, you know, pay for the game and help them. But
look, yeah, exactly. Well, at the end of the day, I'm interested to see how Shenmue 3 turns out. And it's coming to PS4 and, surprisingly, PC at the end of this year. Supposedly releasing in December. So, yeah, interested to see how that goes.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the
games of our lives.
All right, guys, games of our lives. This week we're talking 1990 through to 1994.
Oh, good bunch of years.
Yes. All right, 1990, go.
The Secret of Monkey Island. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's another one of those ones that I have tattooed on my arm, so I kind of had
Super Mario World, dude.
No. The Secret of Monkey Island.
Super Mario World. 1991.
Oh, man. this hurts to say, but it was Turtles in Time, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I had the original Battletoads there.
Oh, good. Okay, I don't feel so bad. It was such a hard year to choose.
1992.
Mortal Kombat.
I've gone Super Mario Land 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was awesome. I loved that on my Game Boy. And I also put down, it's a bit of a hard one because Dune 2, which was an RTS. One of the first RTSs I played along with the original Warcraft, but I played Dune 2 originally on Sega Mega Drive, and I think this was the release of the PC version.
Yeah.
When I was looking up. So I'm still going to stand by Super Mario Land 2, but I just wanted to give a mention to Dune 2 because it was one of the first RTSs I ever played, and it sort of got me into the genre. And I think a genre-defining game should, you know, for me, you know, goes in there as like a high mention next to Super Mario Land 2. 1993.
Mega Man X.
For me, I went for Sonic CD, which was on the Mega CD.
Wow. All right.
I thought that was amazing. But then I had a look at the year again, and Shining Force 2 came out that year as well. I find it really hard to split them. So I'll probably still go with my first choice of Sonic CD because I thought it was really, really good.
Nice.
Soundtrack was cool. It was fun. But Shining Force 2 is right up there, like neck and neck. Like, again, another one of those hard ones. And this is what it's going to be pretty much the theme from here on out. Each year, there's some that are just neck and neck, and you just can't separate them, I feel.
Yeah, but you have to be a man, and you must choose one.
Oh, okay. What is it? When we get to 97, and you're gonna have a big cry at 97, I think it is. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that one next time, won't we, mate? All right.
We will. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm about the manliest list writer.
1994.
All right. Now back to real men. 1994. Donkey Kong Country.
Easy. Oh yes. All right. So in 1994, I went with, in the end, after a lot of deliberation on this, I went with Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Oh, big
now you're
Sonic
gonna, fan. Now you're going to go, hang on, Callan, that's two games.
Well.
And I turn around to you, Callan, and I'll say no, because Sonic 3 attached into the top of Sonic and Knuckles turned the game into Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Yeah, no, I do remember.
Yeah. So it was, you could play from the start to the end in one sitting without taking any cartridges there. It was kind of like almost an expansion pack, really, Sonic and Knuckles. But I think what they originally wanted to do was make one game, but it didn't have the memory on those cartridges, so they went this way, connecting them together.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was like kind of revolutionary.
And I love that, those two games, so I sort of went with that as my game. Even though it's two, it's still one.
Well, it's one. You're playing the same game twice.
Yeah. Look, the other mentions, special mentions, of course, Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah, come on.
Wait for it. And the other juggernaut of that year, Super Metroid.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Super Metroid is just so many people I know's like game of their life, like favorite game of all time.
It's a very, very, very good game. Like, I remember playing that with a friend of mine and we spent hours going through it. And then years later, went back on an emulator and tried it again and went through for hours on it again and was like, this is still an incredible game. On to our question for this week. This comes from Matt Noski.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Matt. He asks, if Blu-ray starts to fade away as a delivery system, as it feels like it already is, will games get bigger or smaller to accommodate the platform? I mean, if I had to download 80 gigs, I'd not even bother, Matt says. He feels this might affect sales in countries like Australia.
All right, so that's a great question because that's like a three-tier question. Let's go from that first paragraph.
Yes.
What was that again?
A game's going to get bigger or smaller as Blu-ray starts to fade away due to the online delivery.
I want to even go back further in that question where it says Blu-ray is inevitably fading away.
Mm.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, well.
I don't know if it's inevitably fading away. I mean, like, I guess inevitably, like, in the future one day, but I don't know how close that is. I mean, It could be, but you, and there is a lot of downloadable content, but I don't know if it's just me, but there's something about holding software and having a physical collection that is just so high in my priority of media.
Well, do you think another type of disc could be invented that could store even more data?
Again, you know, like, maybe. I'm so sick of rebuilding my movie collection at this stage, so maybe he does have a point, because if it's just downloadable, I never have to do that again. But then I can't buy cool shelves in my house.
Yeah.
But, you know, that in itself, if they have to invent another one after, like, 4K Blu-ray or... then I think it is definitely time to go all digital. At what point do you just keep rebuilding this collection of movies?
How would you feel in, let's say, I don't know, 4 years' time? And they go, Horizon 2, digital only. It's 200 gigs in size, though.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Like, he's then going to go, oh, I really want to play Horizon 2, but on Australia internet, like it is at the moment, that's going to take me a week to download and go over my cap twice.
Yeah. You know? Just gonna have to press download.
It's really hard to tell, but unless they come up with great ways to compress data and better ways for our systems to unpack that data, but then what's the smallest that can be compacted down to as well? Thanks for the question, Matt. Appreciate it.
Yeah, nice.
And anyone else, if you've got questions, put them on our Facebook page, send us a message, you know, we'll answer them.
Easy. Yeah, just jump on facebook.com/GameTrainPodcast and we'll be right there.
All right, Lame Train.
All right. But my Lame Train is just simply, I really, really, really want to try Persona 5, and it's just getting on so far. And by the time I've tried it and want to tell you guys about it, it'll be like ancient. But I went to go get it, and it's completely sold out all over the state. And then I came home and thought, oh, I could just download it. But I really want the disc. Not so I can bring it back, Callan, because I want to build my collection.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
What if you don't like it?
I'll like it. No,
are you sure? You said you were going to like ukulele.
Yeah, I did.
And Andromeda that. And Wildlands you sold to me pretty much.
Yeah, well, it was great. It looked great. It was great when it worked. I don't want to talk about Wildlands anymore.
Okay, all right. So mine is kind of almost similar again, in a way, right? It's about going to a shop and buying a game.
Yeah.
But when I was in there buying ukulele the other day, the guy's like, oh yeah, I'll get the game for you. And I'm expecting the man to walk out the back and bring me a nice shrink-wrapped box. Nope, he opens the drawer to bring me out one that's already been taken out of the box.
Yeah, they do that a bit lately. This.
And you know what? In the end, actually, he didn't take it from the drawer and he went, oh, one sec, and walked out and got me, like, you know, one in the shrink-wrap. Now, it annoys me. Why do these places take them all out of the cases? Other than the display shelves ones, right?
Well, they
because
have, like,
it's not taking up any extra room. It still takes up the exact same room because they've still got the fucking cases out the back of the store. It's not saving any room at all.
Hype train. Boom. Fully connected to my last one is Persona 5. I'm really excited for it. I haven't played a really good JRPG in the longest time because I thought they were dated and that, you know, maybe they didn't work anymore. And I've just been hearing and reading everywhere that this is just the greatest example of an old JRPG with the, you know, the waiting. What do you even call that?
Active time battle.
Yeah, active time battle sort of thing. And sitting there and you know, strategizing your moves and thinking it through. I loved it so much in the old Final Fantasies. And I mean, Final Fantasy, and they're so great because they do try and change things up every time and take leaps and bounds, and sometimes it fails and sometimes it doesn't, but, you know, they take that risk, but they're never the same, which kind of makes me miss all the other older ones or, like, the Chrono Triggers. And so I'm really, really excited to give this one a go, and now that it was sold out, I feel like I'm waiting for it again, so it's on my hype train as if I'm waiting for it to be released, because I keep going to check when it's in, and I've pre-ordered it, and I'm just really excited to give it a go.
So my hype train for this week is that the AFL game got a release date. I'm excited that it's coming soon, because at one stage I thought it was going to come out at the end of the year, like one of the other AFL games did many years ago, and it was a bit of a letdown because the season had finished, and I was like, oh, and now the AFL game's here. Rather than while you're in the middle of the season, it's great to get the game and have a go. Yeah, so I'm kind of excited for it, you know, so... Yeah, I'm excited that the women's competition's in it. I'm really happy that I've managed to add that in too. So.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. But again, everyone, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And thank you to Drop Bear Gaming for the little shout-out the other day.
Oh, yeah, guys, please check these guys out. They, you guys probably don't know this, but they really actually helped us out a lot in getting started and showing us a few of the ropes and helping out, well, with me anyway, and helping me out on different things online. And Lucas has been really helpful with giving me ideas and just helping me do my thing. But Lucas and Matt doing their thing on Drop Bear Gaming. It's another podcast, Australian, two Australian guys. They're just having a chat and their opinions, really funny, a lot of fun. Maybe don't play it with the kids around. That's my only advice.
But yeah, thank you all again. Remember, send in your questions. We'll answer them. Next time on the Game Train podcast, we will be looking at Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which is coming out on the Switch.
Yes.
So a big game coming out on the Switch is really cool. So we're going to be looking at that. We're going to be looking at all the online features for the Switch, because we're going to be able to test all this out. We're going to play against each other online, tell you what it's like compared to Xboxes and PlayStation's versions of their online, and is it worth the money? Because these are all, along with Xbox and PlayStation, where you got to pay subscriptions to play online, you got to do that with the Switch as well.
We'll tell you if it's
worth it or not, and if they've got enough features for it as of yet. And of course, all of our normal news, random stuff we talk about, what we're playing in between, more games of our lives, Lame Train and Hype Train. All right, I'm Callan. This has been fun.
Thank you very much, guys.
And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.